listening to OmniTalk's Retail Fast Five, brought to you in partnership with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group, Avalara, Wiliot, TGW, and Sezzle. Ranked in the top 10% of all podcasts globally and currently ranked the number one podcast in all of retail by FeedSpot, the Retail Fast Five is the podcast that we hope makes you feel a little smarter, but most importantly, a little happier each week too. Today, it's April 17th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Ann Mazenga.
And I'm Chris Walton, at least I think I am, Ann.
We are here live from the World Retail Congress in Paris once again to discuss the most important headlines from the past week that highlight how the physical, digital, and human elements of retail are coming together to shape the future. Yep. Bonjour.
Bonjour, Anne. Bonjour.
I think that's what we say
here. I think it is. Bonjour, yes. And I got to tell you, I think I have the worst case of jet lag I've ever had in my life.
Like,
I think 4 hours of sleep the last couple of nights. But hey, you know, our motto is you got to post. You got to post at OmniTalk. You got to show up.
And we're going to post.
You
like, is
post.
That a basketball term or something?
I don't know. I heard it somewhere from a sales guy one time. You got to post. And when it's time to put on the show must go on, Anne. And so we're here. We're ready to do this. We're ready to do the Fast Five to start the show. And then we've got a huge, huge slate of interviews scheduled for today, too, as well.
Really well scheduled, Chris, I have to say. Chris took the lead while I was on vacation. And, man, we've got what you would call a banger lineup.
Yeah.
Lego, Mattel, Dairy Farm, IKEA Group. Like
Kmart Australia, CEO of
Kmart Australia. That was a great presentation, by the way, yesterday by Scott Price.
It was.
Ian Bailey.
Ian Bailey, yes. Like we said, the jet lag is here, and it's going to happen a lot during this show, but stick with us, guys, because we're going to do a great, great show. And, you know, a funny thing I was thinking about last night to start this show.
Oh, I can only imagine.
You can only imagine where this is going, right? I was thinking that an exclamatory word that we need to, like, make happen more is chimichanga. Like, could you imagine if you said, what do you think of this headline? And I went, chimichanga. It's so great, right? Like, I think I'm going to try to weave chimichanga in an exclamatory way throughout this podcast, Dan.
I think you're making me think of, like, cowabunga.
Yeah, right? But chimichanga, right? Like, it works, right?
I feel like cowabunga is the better term.
Oh,
chimichanga
really?
Is like,
it's too
like
Teenage
are you
Mutant Ninja
hungry?
Turtle, though.
What are you telling me with chimichanga?
Yeah, that's why it's so good, because
it
can mean so many things.
We
but
need to get to the headlines.
Let's do the show,
the audience
Ann.
Has dropped. Already.
Chimichanga. All right. Today we've got news on GoPuff debuting something it is calling Powered by GoPuff for CPG brands. A lot in that phrase. A New York City chicken shop that has replaced its cashiers with Filipinos over Zoom. Aldi retrofitting a store to be checkout free with Gribango. Ann and I give our perspectives on the Just Walk Out versus Dash Cart debate.
Yeah.
And A&M's Chad Lusk returns for 5 insightful minutes on the state of U.S. consumer sentiment. Yes, he's here to talk about their latest update to that report that they do periodically throughout the year. But we begin today with big news out of Walmart Canada.
Right. Chris,
what's this story all about?
Chris, headline number one is that Walmart Canada has revealed what it is calling the, quote, store of the future. According to Canadian grocer, Walmart Canada has cut the ribbon on its newly renovated flagship in Mississauga. I believe that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think
Mississauga,
you nailed it.
Mississauga, Ontario, which includes...
It sounds good to me.
Okay. Someone will correct us. I have no doubt. Which includes a heavy focus on in-store tech and an expanded grocery offering. Billed by the retailer as their store of the future, the 223,000 square foot space, which is massive.
That's
like two Targets,
yeah, I didn't catch that the first time.
Oh, yeah. That was what I... We'll talk about it later, but
yeah.
223,000 square feet is massive. Located within the Square One Shopping Center in the city's downtown core. Upgrades to the store, Chris, include digital and interactive maps for easier navigation, additional self-checkout kiosks, a 5,000 square foot automated warehouse to fulfill online delivery and pickup orders, digital screens on shelf, and more. Walmart Canada's chief operating officer, John Bayless, had this to say about the store's grand reopening. Quote, while we call it a store of the future, it feels a lot like a Walmart still, and that's by design. But we want to make sure that we add some really interesting notes to how we're digitizing the experience for our customers, but also simplifying operations for our associates, end quote, said Walmart Canada's chief of operations, once again, John Bayless, during the grand reopening on early Friday morning. Now, Chris, you know John Bayless, right? Like, you guys are bros from, like, HBS or something.
Yeah, actually,
right?
We were section mates at HBS. Yes, section I. Shout out to all our section I fellow classmates. Yeah, John Bayless and I. Yeah, I remember we went to dinner at Outback Steakhouse together back in 2004.
Did you share a Bloomin' Onion?
I think we did, actually. I think we did. And he's probably listening because I was talking to him on social media yesterday, congrats about this this announcement. But yeah, I mean, it's funny too. He's trying to downplay the store of the future thing a little bit, which is probably the smart move because, right, you know, it at the end of the day, this term gets thrown around too much, like we've talked about a lot, and it's really just the next iteration of what they think the prototype potentially could be in Canada, or maybe a little more aggressive in terms of trying to understand what that prototype is. But
or they're just Canadians and they're just like downplaying.
Yeah, they're downplaying it, yeah, right? Like Minnesotans would too. But I mean, net, I'm excited to see the store, and I think it's been in the works for a while. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before when they first announced it. And the parts I'm most intrigued about are, one, the micro warehouse.
Yeah,
I think that's a cool thing. Two, is also how John in the article, if you read it, he describes that they're not just using electronic shelf labels, but they're actually using LCD rails to also help with planogramming, which is a new thing, like planogram setup for the employees, so they can see where to place the products, which is a new use case that we have not talked about and I had not heard about or even thought about before. So I think that's really cool. So I think net again, a trip to Toronto should be in order here as soon as possible.
I think it's
maybe another Bloomin' Onion
with Mississauga.
Yeah.
We're going to go there.
Yeah.
We're not too far
away. I'm going to call up my buddy Bayless and see if he can give us a tour at some point.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I like it for a few different reasons. I mean, I think, including the ones that you highlighted, but I like it because it's all the right elements of a one-stop shop. They put the health hub in there. They've got a full grocery assortment. I mean, and the micro fulfillment center, like, that's only 5,000 square feet of 223,000 square feet is kind of baffling to me. But yeah, I think that, you know, they are also leveraging electronic shelf labels in a major way, which I think is really important to call out for the reasons you mentioned. They're also working with Vusion Group for those electronic shelf labels, which we'll talk about more today.
Who, if you're watching this video, we're actually at their booth again at WRC. So thank you to them for their support.
Yes. I am a little bit surprised, though. One question I would ask your friend John Bayless is why they're doing the pilots in the cracker aisle. Because that's what they talk about. Like, they're doing these ESL pilots in the cracker aisle. Mm-hmm. And everything that we've heard from A&M, from John Clear and those groups, when they're talking about where to deploy some of this technology, we've heard that it makes more sense to do this. You see a quicker ROI when you're doing this in Fresh and some of the other places too. So I think that's one question that I would have about, like, why choosing this particular aisle to do those tests. But it's great because they're using this technology to its fullest extent. They're also giving retailers and brands a way to create new content together and to give another purpose, another place for this retail media content to show up that's already being created by the brands, and now it can be happening right in the aisle. So I'm excited about this. A couple questions I'd ask him, but other than that, I think this is a great way to deploy tech.
Yeah, and open invitation, John, if you're listening, to come on the show whenever you want. We'll definitely entertain that should you desire it. But I think my take on that is probably, and it's hard to understand where electronic shelf labels begin and end in that store. I think they were talking specifically about the rail use case in that, and that actually probably is a good place because it's shelf stable product. It's fairly easy to manage, and you can understand the dynamics of there to try to planogram, and it's probably more of a planogrammed scenario as well. So that's my hunch there in terms of what's going on. There's probably more broad application of electronic shelf labels in the store as well too. But all right, like, headline number two, GoPuff has debuted a new Powered by GoPuff platform for CPG brands. According to Chain Storage, the Powered by GoPuff platform, that's three P's in four words, will offer a suite of solutions that help brands deliver from their owned and operated direct-to-consumer websites in as fast as 15 minutes, leveraging GoPuff's logistics network, instant fulfillment infrastructure, and technology. CPG brands can leverage online ads and marketing to drive sales from their own websites, bringing them more control over the customer experience and access to first-party data. Specifically, Storefronts, powered by GoPuff, is a customizable Shopify theme integrated with GoPuff's APIs. With Storefronts, brands can launch their own white-label DTC sites in a matter of days. Orders placed on a partner's storefront are automatically routed to the nearest GoPuff micro-fulfillment center, where they're picked, packed, and delivered to customers in as fast as 15 minutes. And
yes,
that was a long read. And in honor of that read,
oh God,
this is the A&M put you on the spot question. All from right. Paris, 2 days here, 48 hours, jet lag hitting you hard. Here it is. In a 2023 Statista study, nearly 70%. Yeah, we're coming on. We're coming out of the gates hot, Ann.
All right, here
coming
we go.
Out of the gates real hot. In a 2023 Statista study, nearly 70% of shoppers who haven't done so already would consider purchasing food and beverage online directly from a brand's website. Mm-hmm. Yet CPG food and beverage DTC sales are still relatively small. Are platforms like Powered by GoPuff, which leverage a core capability for the logistics provider, but not the CPG brand, a big factor in breaking those gates wide open?
No, I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think it's one part of this. I think when I heard about this, the first thing that I thought of was, okay, we are all discovering products, including brands, for the first time on platforms like TikTok, platforms like Instagram, where the brands are really going to us directly for the very first time. So I think this is something that brands do need to invest in. Now, Carter Jensen over at General Mills, he shared with us a few years back Ratio Foods doing this type of concept, really taking you from TikTok advertisement for their brand. Maybe it's a recipe or something, taking you to the Ratio Foods brand-owned site. And then being able to, at that point, give the consumer every single option that they could want, whether it's going to pick something up from their local store in a couple of hours, getting something shipped directly from the brand, in a few days. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the option, in that case it was Uber Eats, but really working on how do I get this to somebody, especially in a snacking occasion where they're going to want it now. Mm-hmm. They want it now, which was kind of core to mm-hmm. GoPuff and some of the other instant delivery providers. So I do think that this is a fantastic way for brands to be able to focus on how they get their product to the consumer. I have some questions, though. Like, this is a white-labeled brand site. They say that the brands are still getting first-party information, but, like, this is now on Shopify, so if the brand's not on Shopify. Like, there's just a lot of logistics back-end questions, having worked on that platform for mm-hmm. a long time, that I'm like, how exactly are they going to pull this off? But to answer A&M's question, I don't think it's dependent on GoPuff alone, but I do think that if GoPuff has any opportunity to stay alive here, this is a use case where it could bolster that business for GoPuff.
So you're hitting on something there at the end, the stay alive, the GoPuff stay alive. Did you also love the Gary Vaynerchuk quote about how this is like the next big thing in CPG? That makes me be automatically skeptical, quite frankly, of this whole idea.
I wouldn't be surprised if Gary's like hanging out. Gary V's just hanging out in the GoPuff warehouse, sleeping and having keggers with the rest of the GoPuff staff who's living in the warehouses.
Right. I'm jaded about this headline, Ann.
Okay. Well,
like,
tell me
in
more.
A lot of ways. So first of all, I think, any brand, it's not hard for a brand to stand up its own website.
No.
I mean, you just gave an example of it, and that was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep.
It's pretty easy to do. So do you really need GoPuff to help you do that?
Yeah.
So that's one question I would have.
Some might. I don't know. I mean, there's some brands that may need that to provide the instant delivery component.
Some might.
Yes.
But you don't really need it. So, and then second, the logistics piece is cool, especially the 15-minute hook.
Yeah.
I think that's the most interesting part of this, which I could see appealing to a lot of CPGs because it gives them a new use case and an extension to meet their consumer at a different time. So that part's interesting.
Yeah.
But to the point we always say on the show, it's expensive to still do this on your own, regardless of how you do it and regardless of what third-party delivery operator you're going to use.
Correct.
So, like, from GoPuff's standpoint, it makes sense because it's giving you scale to your operations. And that, to me, it reeks of desperation for that reason. But there's a lot of micro-warehousing third-party services that do the same thing and probably do it with better technology in the back room, in the warehouse design, and better algorithms in the fulfillment in terms of how they operate things too. So for that, I don't think I see a lot of this making a lot out of this in the long run. especially since the big retailers are all making express delivery part of what they do already.
Right.
And as part of their subscription programs. And the brands would rather fulfill through them because of the economics of it. So where does this go in the long run? So that's what I think. So you're laughing, but and people are taking pictures of us here at the show too while we're talking. But I mean, it just kind of, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. That gets back to my core question. There's a lot of logistics questions that I think you bring up good points about why a brand is going to go this route versus building it there from their own ground up. But there are a lot
of leveraging the retail network already.
True,
right?
But there are a lot of small brands out there and independent brands, startup brands that this could work for. So I think the verdict's still out on its total possible addressable market, but we'll see. All right, let's go to headline number three, Chris. A New York City chicken shop has replaced its cashiers with a woman in the Philippines who interacts with in-store customers over Zoom. According to 404 Media, a new one for
the... Yeah, 404 Media.
I'm not familiar with them prior to this. But
so is that like you don't get the information because it's like seven digits less than 411? Like,
oh, I was thinking
I don't know.
Like 404 forbidden error. Like the like this
like
page
a 404
is not
error.
Loading. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that is what it is.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
smart,
anyway,
man. Smart.
According to 404 Media, the cashier at Sansan Chicken in East Village, New York City, sits on a computer monitor on top of an empty cashier desk and interacts with customers via a virtual Zoom background with the store's logo. Don't worry, it's there. An iPad that would normally serve as a payment terminal reads, "Welcome to my store" in Comic Sans. Don't know why that's important. When the cashier...
Who writes these things, yeah?
I don't know. Definitely a former art director who's like, Comic Sans. Ugh.
Well, and who decides to include them in the headline reads, too?
A former art director.
Yours truly.
Yes. Okay, when the cashier leaves to take a break, she switches her background to say, "The cashier will be back." On a piece of paper taped to the cash register and facing customers is the handwritten Zoom meeting ID and password, presumably so a human employee at the restaurant can dial in the remote worker. Chris,
yeah.
What do you think of this Sansan shenanigans here happening?
Yeah, I mean, I want to get my chicken this way, and I love this. I think it's great.
Why?
Well, I think here's the thing. I think no doubt, especially as you read the experience, like it probably sucks, right? It's terrible.
Yeah, but if you saw the pictures, it looks awful.
Right, it looks awful. But it's only mile one of the marathon of getting this idea to work, you know, and getting it to work at scale. Like Chad Lusk, we're going to have on the show, we were talking to him earlier, he brought up how this is actually the idea that's in Back to the Future 2. And so, like, you know, and that was 25, 30
years ago. Yeah, maybe
there's
a reason
ago.
That it... is not happening 25.
No, but I disagree.
Later.
So like to me, like imagine if there was no latency in the interaction. Your order was appearing before you on the screen as you say it to somebody, just like at the drive-thru. And how's it really that different than using your mobile phone or a kiosk at McDonald's? So
very.
You think so? Because
yeah.
I don't think so because we've heard it at WRC, right? Stores are getting harder and harder to staff.
Yes,
the
agreed.
Cost of labor is going up as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, it makes sense to experiment with this. And for me, I don't see it as any different. Like, I don't understand why drive-thrus don't do this already. You don't see the person at the drive-thru now. And there's latency in the drive-thru experience. So, like, why do you need somebody there? I just think... I give the Sansan chicken people all the credit in the world for having the guts to do this and see if it works. Because if the chicken's good, people are still going to go, in my opinion.
I guess, but, you know, this is going to probably be an unpopular opinion. But I think if we're going to start to see any drop in just human interaction overall, even though we need these jobs as entry-level jobs for people to participate in, it's going to be the QSR industry. And I,
yep.
Because I don't think that you need a person at all, Chris. I hate to say it. I think that with the advances and the adoption of mobile ordering from everywhere, from McDonald's to Starbucks, like ordering just...
Oh, you just force a digital... You're going even more cheap. You're
I
saying
am.
Force a digital interaction.
I am. I think,
okay.
Especially
right.
for a small
I
operator like this, like I don't think that... I would not have gone the route of worrying about onboarding, having an employee in the store be responsible for connecting a Zoom. Like, why don't you just force mobile ordering and then go backward? If you really feel like you need a human in the loop in this case, then maybe you figure out how to rearrange store staffing and things like that. Like, I just think going directly to mobile ordering makes the most sense. People prefer it because you get to put your own requests in, or your, you know, especially with the Starbucks
app. You're doing
app.
It on DoorDash all the time.
You're doing it all the time. Yeah. I think that adoption,
great point.
Adoption has gotten to the point, especially when you talk about you can't hire people. The cost for QSR workers in California, it's $20 an hour minimum wage now in California for these types of workers. Like, I just don't understand how the economics continue to work with humans in this place. And the last thing I'll say is yesterday we're in the lobby, right? There's a Starbucks here in the lobby. The person just goes and pushes a button and makes the coffee and hands it to me now. Like, these are scenarios where you're like,
the European coffee making. Yes.
Let's just be real about this. Where are humans best serving this experience? And it's maybe in the greeting. It's maybe in something else. It's not with the ordering platform. So I would just do away with this altogether.
Well, I stand corrected, and I think you got me convinced. Yeah, that's the way to go. If you're just gonna do this anyway, because people aren't gonna be happy, just force it to happen. I think that's a really smart point. Yeah, kudos. All right, let's bring Chad on now.
All right.
Joining us now for 5 insightful minutes is OmniTalk friend, partner, and managing director at the A&M Consumer and Retail Group, Chad Lusk. Chad will be discussing with us the results of his company's most recent consumer sentiment survey. Chad, start with this. Why is it essential for retailers to read this report and to focus on the insights in this spring's survey?
First of all, guys, I wish I had better news. Consumers are even more pessimistic this spring compared to the fall. And we're seeing consumers at all levels continuing to cut back versus the past cycles. Yeah. Now, maybe that's expected a little bit. So why read this report? Well, you know, retailers need to be prepared. You know, within these surveys, we ask consumers about where and how they plan to spend their money, on what, in what channels, and what drives them or inhibits them to make purchases. And what's most important about this is it's a leading indicator versus looking at things in the rear view. So retailers can leverage these insights to develop plans, manage inventory, optimize marketing, and determine pricing strategies.
Now, Chad, we were in the last time that we talked to you, we were looking at something like this trending in this direction. In this report, are you finding any material differences for this spring summer cycle?
The consumers that have previously been the most immune to the economic downturn are actually now tightening their belts the most. So perhaps the biggest difference this spring from previous cycles, and we've done 6 of these now, is the anticipated spending decreases from the higher income groups. So we're talking household incomes of 100,000 or more. They're shifting their own personal pie chart and prioritizing savings more. And they're championing shopping behaviors to purchase items for less, such as waiting for items to go on sale or looking to shop secondhand options at an expedited rate. So all this is to show that there's actually like a trickle up effect on spend conservatism, which is hitting all income levels and all types of goods, discount and luxury both.
Wow. Okay, let's go to the category level then, Chad. What are you seeing there? And are consumers stating intentions to spend differently and make any trade-offs?
We have a really good chart in this report that shows whether consumers plan to spend more or less over the next 6 months by category. Only 3 categories showed a net desire to spend more at all. And only 1 category actually increased from the fall. And that was fresh food. And the thing about fresh food, talking about trade-offs, is that consumers tend to spend more on fresh food when they're cutting back on dining out, ordering prepared meals, generally food that is more entertainment, higher convenience, and higher cost. So that actually going up is a cutback in and of itself. So that's first. Not surprisingly, experiences are down. So, which is unfortunate given the upcoming summer season. So sports, entertainment, outdoor activities, approximately 60% of our respondents said they're going to spend less. It's down 1,000 basis points from the fall, which is huge. Interestingly enough though, like consumers are still prioritizing travel. There was an increase in the number of respondents taking a vacation from last spring. And those who said that they were going to take a vacation this year, almost 40% of them said that they hadn't taken one last year, and multi-year consecutive vacationers are up. And this really hits the highest income bracket. So back to them again. In fact, for $200,000 plus household income brackets, nearly 70% of them said they were going to reduce spending this upcoming 6 months in aggregate, yet they made the biggest statement on prioritizing travel among any income group. So it's the big stuff that consumers are prioritizing and saving for extended experiences versus these habitual, smaller entertainment spending like sporting events, even at home, streaming services, or honestly, alcohol, which was virtually at the bottom of our category list in terms of intent to spend.
Wow. So Chad, what do retailers do now with this more budget conscious consumer across the entire spectrum for the spring and summer?
So, I mean, first, budget conscious consumer is no longer the low or middle income earners, right?
Yeah.
So high income households are the ones actually now most likely to wait for a sale in order to purchase. So not so much on daily necessities like food and personal care and pet supplies, but discretionary categories like apparel or home decor or improvement, electronics. They're waiting for that sale at an alarming rate. So retailers should be thinking about targeting deals for this higher price merchandise for these categories in question and trying to increase purchase frequency among current customers. And I would say counter to trying to acquire new customers on promo who probably aren't going to be as sticky and loyal, right? Aside from deals, there's tons of info in the report, a few nuggets to highlight. Gifting is way down. So rethink any advertising messages about buying for others. Secondhand continues to rise. And surprise, surprise, among high income households too. So think about whether an offering there makes sense for your brand and customers. Nearly half of respondents under 35 are using social media to purchase more than once per month. So are you leveraging that platform? And then the last thing is consumers are talking about net positive experiences with personalization through technology. So perhaps surprisingly, virtual try-on, VR to see how things look in your home, across the board, consumers are net positive on this.
Wow.
However, be wary because these are the areas where consumers' expectations rise the most when it comes to technology. So, you know, it requires savvy retailers to kind of do the same thing and up their game on, quite frankly, online and the in-store tech stack.
And it's still discretionary spend too. Wow.
Yeah.
That was incredibly insightful, Chad. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right, headline number four, Aldi has retrofitted a store with Grabango. According to Chain Store Age, Aldi has retrofitted a suburban Chicago location with a frictionless experience it calls Aldi Go.
All right.
Yeah, gotta love that one. The discount grocer implemented the Grabango checkout free solution to an existing store in a Chicago suburb. That Chicago suburb is Aurora, Illinois, without needing to make any changes to the store's planogram or product displays. Oh. The technology, which uses computer vision to identify and keep track of every item in the store, allows shoppers to exit without waiting in line or scanning items. To use Aldi Go, customers shop the Aurora Aldi store as they normally do, including for fresh meat and seafood and organic produce, as well as pantry staples. There are no special shelves, carts, or gates at the entrance either, and when done, shoppers can pay with either their credit card or debit card or with the Grabango app at the Grabango pay station near the exit.
Yeah.
Alternatively, shoppers, this is important, still also have the option to check out with a traditional cashier. And
yes.
Why do you think this is big news, particularly in light of last week's Just Walk Out announcement, which we are going to talk about even more in our last headline today?
Look, I think that the timing of this announcement was very interesting, especially given all of the swirl around
right.
what Amazon has going on and their presumed pullback from Just Walk Out already in all their grocery stores, but then in other areas as well.
In favor of the Dash Cart.
Yes. I also think, though, that this concept still has legs. I really still... Yep. I think that there is a smart case to be made, especially in an Aldi store. The reason being, like, Aldi shopping experience. You know, you go in there, you get all your stuff, then you have to pull out your own bags, then you have to bag everything. Like, as an Aldi shopper, I think this is awesome because you go in, you can start bagging all your stuff right there. You get out of it, you eliminate the long lines that typically occur, especially as more people are shopping Aldi as a low priced retailer for grocery. I think this really makes sense, and I think that Grabango is going in here with the right way, minimal hardware compared to some of the other investments. So that, to me, I think this is big, big news. But your thoughts on this, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, I think to jump on what you're saying too, I think, you know, people have long said that Aldi is the perfect place to have a Just Walk Out experience for the things that you're describing. But to me, that I'll make this really quick because then I do want to get to headline five, because I think it bridges to this story bridges to that really nicely to have a really good, robust discussion on it. But the points I would make here are cameras only.
Yep.
That's huge.
Yep.
You don't have to relay your shelves with sensor fusion.
Yep.
Right. And making it so you can weigh things like in to that degree. So that's huge.
Yep.
The retrofit, the first U.S. retrofit store, also big because it's much easier from the people we've talked to make computer vision work in a new, manicured environment versus like a down and dirty operation that already exists. And then
with no changes to the planogram.
Right. And no new fixturing.
Right.
That's the key point there. Those two go together. And so then the last point, too, which I think is important to touch on, especially as we bridge into the next story, they're not forcing one option. Mm-hmm. You know, you can still have the traditional checkout experience, but for those that want it, they can use it.
Yep.
And then you still get all the benefits of shrink and inventory accuracy as well while the system's in play. So those are the three points I'd call out here that are really important.
All right. Well, let's continue this conversation for headline number five, Chris. So GeekWire pitted Amazon's Just Walk Out technology against its Dash Cart and a traditional man checkout experience. And the winner might surprise you. So GeekWire went through an Amazon Fresh store in Seattle three times. Okay. These two guys three times. They had the same 10 item shopping list the whole time to test Just Walk Out cashierless technology, then the Dash Cart, and then the old fashioned checkout line. And the goal was to determine which method was going to be fastest and most seamless for shoppers. So the winner of this experiment was the technology that Amazon is actually moving away from.
Right.
Just Walk Out. The least favorite option was the approach that Amazon is now betting on, which is the Amazon Dash Cart. They said that the learning curve was just too much to get over with the Dash Cart, while Just Walk Out was simply a more convenient and faster way to shop for groceries. So, Chris, let's break down, because we've been talking about this so much throughout the course of the last few days, really. What are your thoughts here, and why do we choose this GeekWire story to cover?
Yeah, and it's an evolving story too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because the Aldi story broke yesterday, and we decided to include that as the bridge. But okay, I have a lot of thoughts here. First, I want to give a shout out to the GeekWire folks, Taylor Soper, for coming up with this, because this is something that I'm jealous of that we didn't go and
I know.
Because I feel like we missed out. But so kudos to them for doing it. However, I will say an experiment is only as good as the information that you put into that experiment. And I think the 10 items requirement that they use to evaluate each of the different options is a little bit misguided or misleading, because a traditional large format grocery store, the interesting about it is it has to appeal to every trip type.
Yes.
It has to be designed for everyone. Mm-hmm. So a 10 item trip is not a very big grocery trip.
No.
You know, it's very different from a 30-item trip.
Sure.
And so that's an important thing to think about as you're making this determination. Mm-hmm. So then you get to the point of like, okay, if I think about the bigger size trip, and let's just have a conversation here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, which one do I want to work better? If the cart's already hard to get over with 10 items, it's going to be hard to get over with 30 items.
Yes.
It's going to be impossible, right?
Yep.
But then you go traditional checkout versus Just Walk Out. Just Walk Out, I still got to bag everything. Mm-hmm. That's always been a question of mine too. So like, I'm still going to have to go somewhere. I'm not going to bag everything as I go along. That seems too difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, but so like, I'm still going to go to some place at the end of that experience or potentially to bag it. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, you get to an experience like where you have the option to choose, because again, the format is designed to appeal to many different trip types. And it's just going to work in the background to make however you want to interact with that store better. Mm-hmm. It can make the traditional checkout experience better because you've got the cameras there that are speeding up the cashiers, potentially speeding up your information in your bill.
Yeah,
it's got the self-checkout option with the traditional hardware that can be, you know, made better as well through the same principles and processes. Mm-hmm. And if you want to put a cart in there too, for the people that want a different option, sure, go for it. And you get the retail media angle to it too. So I don't know that there's no right answer here. It's just going to be, how do we think about this in the long run? At least that's what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, I think you have a huge customer adoption hurdle to get over. I think it's already confusing
with
though.
Both.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But that's what I guess in the scenario that you're playing up, from my perspective, like where you're saying, like, give them all the options. Is that what you're saying? Or you're just saying, like, test all the options?
No, I'm saying you give them, I'm saying the ubiquitous option can work to improve both experiences. So if I go and I have a traditional experience,
yes,
you're going to get the inventory accuracy, you're going to get the shrink prevention, and it's going to speed up the cashier because the cashier almost in a lot of ways doesn't have to do anything but bag.
Yes.
However, if I also want the experience where I just want to walk out, mm-hmm. I can.
Yes.
So that's where I think this goes, is where it's kind of like choose your own adventure of how you want to shop the grocery store here in the long run.
Sure.
Which also makes me think, as I'm saying it out loud, makes the cart more obsolete in those scenarios.
The dash cart.
The dash cart.
Like, yeah,
it's not as worthwhile of a proposition to me.
Yeah, I think some of the things that they outlined being challenges are things like weighing and scanning, mm-hmm. and still having to do all of those things with the dash cart,
right,
which I think makes it a little bit more challenging. I just, looking at this from a retailer's perspective, not just the customer perspective, but the retailer perspective, I still think that this case for retail media, unfortunately, is really what's going to win out and move more retailers towards the dash cart versus the just walk out technology, even though I don't know that it's
if
right
they can
move
get the customer adoption though, like, right, does the customer really want that? I mean, we're hearing potentially that people that use a dash, that use these smart carts, particularly the caper carts, are liking right? But at the end of the day too, and my question for you is, like, is a souped up self-checkout machine with computer vision enabling a faster process there any better than a cart?
No,
it's
I don't think so.
Other than the retailer can't do retail media to you directly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but from a customer's perspective, it's not any different, really.
Correct. Yep. I agree. But then I think you start to think about how many customers want to use self-checkout for those big grocery stock
Nobody.
Up trips. Nobody does.
Nobody.
Like weighing your individual, like finding the PLU code on your grapefruit or your oranges and apples and whatever, like, and which they talk about in this scenario is the hard thing that they have to get over with the dash cart. I think for me, the biggest thing still holding back just walk out technology in these cases is real time receipts. I think that people diminish the importance of how much people, especially now, especially, you know, when they're doing this grocery stock up trip, need visibility to what that spend is. And how important that is.
And that is one of the benefits of the cart. Because the cart gives you real-time receipts as you're putting things in.
Yes.
You know?
Or somebody like Trigo, who's doing real-time receipting in an 8,000 square foot grocery store already. So I think the winner here actually, I think, is Instacart. Because they have figured out a product that doesn't disrupt the business. It's not Amazon. So they can sell their cart product, their just walk out cart, or their smart cart product to any retailer who is going to be much more willing to get that technology from Instacart versus Amazon.
Yeah, let's spend a second on that, because that's interesting too. It's like, okay, because of what we just said, you and I are both kind of not bullish on the smart cart.
No.
Like in general. But we think Instacart's going to be the short-term winner here because of Amazon's move. Because the retailers are not going to go with Amazon. They're going to go with somebody else.
Yes.
And Instacart's going to be the beneficiary of that, at least in the short term, and the retail media play, right?
Which is, again, us eating crow. Because I remember at Shop Talk when Instacart came out with a caper cart and everything. Do you remember when Fiji was on stage and we were like, what?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Well, but I don't necessarily think we're going to eat crow, because we're still saying there's a huge customer adoption hurdle to get over.
True.
It's just that the money's going to flow to them. The investment's going to flow to them, because that's how the market's moving. And then the other side of the equation, right, is, okay, Trigo versus Gribango, right? And what happens there? Trigo, better real-time receipt, but you have the sensor fusion.
Yes.
Gribango cameras only, probably easier to install in a lot of degrees. So, and what happens to either side of that, since Amazon goes away from Just Walk Out as a concept?
Right.
Right? Do both of them feel the hit there?
Yeah.
God knows.
Yeah.
It's just such a fascinating.
Oh, man. This is a horse race. This is like, we got to put something together so we can start to
And then by the same token, right? This is why it's so fun to talk about. By the same token, you have the Everseen or the TrueScan technology from Target that they released last week, that it's over the self-checkout machines, that's making that experience better too.
Right.
So do retailers and grocers just go in that direction as well? There's a lot of options.
Yeah, you
here.
Still get product visibility, like image visibility from computer vision scanning at the checkout. Like there's so much.
It's
to
what's
this.
Most palatable, what's in the budget, and what makes the most difference. And I don't think we know.
And who you're going to be frenemies with. All right, let's wrap it up, Chris. Let's go to the lightning round. Since we're in Paris, Chris, my first question for you is somewhat French-themed.
Yeah.
Would you rather drive an Uber or taxi in Paris or New York?
Oh, man.
New York City.
Probably New York City. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, probably New York City. Yeah, because I don't know this. I couldn't get around here in Paris. Like, those. I'm a terrible driver. Those, like, really small streets, like, that'd be not good for anyone. All right, and question two. Ketchup giant Heinz put a big monolithic display right in the heart of Chicago on the Navy Pier to try and sway Chicagoans of the notion that ketchup on a hot dog is a terrible idea. They want to dissuade Chicagoans from thinking that putting ketchup on your hot dog is a bad idea. Do you agree with Heinz or the native Chicagoans?
I thought they wanted you to put ketchup on the hot dog.
Heinz wants you to put ketchup. They want to dissuade the Chicagoans from their belief that putting ketchup on a hot dog is a bad idea.
Okay. I would take a Chicago dog over a regular hot dog with ketchup absolutely every day.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
God, yeah. I'm a mustard person.
Are you? You're a mustard on a hot dog?
Not a ketchup person on a hot dog. No way.
As we've talked about the show, I'm not a hot dog person at all.
Okay, Chris, question number three. Fanatics is launching their first Fanatics Fest, which is basically Comic-Con for sports. Which
still alive athlete,
because God knows you'd go into the archives for this one.
Yeah.
Which still alive athlete would you dress up as and line up to see if you were to attend?
Ooh. It's probably Tom Brady or Larry Bird.
Oh, God. Yeah. Tom Brady?
I mean, if I was dressing up, though, I'd get the butt dimple in the chin, you know? I'd over-accentuate my chin dimple, you know? Like, make it, like, really, like,
you gotta
really
go as
huge.
The Birdman.
Yeah. Get a mullet going,
that's
like
right.
A fake mullet
and
a 33 jersey.
Yeah.
But that's not good for anyone. Me and that. Would you rather see me with a butt dimple or a mullet and a short shorts?
A mullet and shorts.
Really?
Shorts,
wow.
For sure. You got to go all in on this. Tom Brady's just like, meh.
I think the other sex would generally disagree with you, Ann. All right. Oreo is challenging the common perception that the navigation buttons on mobile apps look like a hamburger, stating that, in fact, they look more like a stack of two Oreo cookies. Mm. And where does the Oreo rank for you in terms of delicious packaged cookies? What is your Mount Rushmore of packaged cookies?
Somebody was here yesterday saying they look like a barcode, which I guess I think
the same company, actually. Same ad agency did both of those. Yeah.
It's slick. I like it. Like, from an ad perspective, I do like this approach. I think it's a smart campaign. But anyway, I would say Snackwells top my list.
Snackwells.
Vanilla cream sandwich cookies. Snackwells, still love them if I can find them. But I feel like there's probably something toxic in there because I don't see them around anymore.
Yeah, I haven't seen those in a while.
That ranks number one. Then the Soft Batch chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
They don't make those anymore, do they?
I don't know. They were big in the 90s.
Those were so good.
My aunt used to buy them for me all the time because my parents would get them. But, okay.
So
then,
is Oreo in your top
then
four?
Then Oreo is number three.
Okay, what's number four? What's your Mount Rushmore?
I guess I'd probably say, like, one of those, like, Otis Spunkmeyer cookies or something. Yeah. Like, you know, the vending machine cookies. Yeah. They're, like, decent. They're not great, but, like, they'll do in a pinch.
Not the Chip Ahoy. You're not going Chip Ahoy.
No, I don't like. They're too
crunchy.
I don't
crunchy. Like Chip Ahoy either.
They're too crunchy.
No, so I agree.
I would anything. I'm a soft cookie kind of person.
Yeah. You got to have the soft cookie.
Oh,
yeah, 100%. I think my four is very similar to yours.
What would your four be?
I think it'd probably be the same. I think I'd go Oreo number one, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd probably put the Thin Mint in there, too, in my Mount Rushmore, if you're including the Girl Scout. Oh, you're not? Wow. Oh, yeah. No, I love a good Thin Mint.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And remember, if you can only read or listen to one retail blog in the business, make it OmniTalk. But before we say that, Ann, we got to give a happy birthday today to Sean Bean, Rooney Mara, and to the woman who needs no alias, Jennifer Garner.
Good one. Good one. On
Thank
that.
You, Ed. Yes. Who writes this crap,
Ed? I don't know.
I have no idea.
I do know. It's very evident.
And he's standing right beside you.
Yes.
And remember, if you can only read or listen to one retail blog in the business, make it OmniTalk, the only retail media outlet run by two former executives from a current top 10 U.S. retailer. Our Fast Five podcast is the quickest, fastest rundown of all the week's top news, and our daily newsletter, the Retail Daily Minute, tells you all you need to know each day to stay on top of your game as a retail executive, and also regularly features special content that is exclusive to us and that Ann and I take a lot of pride in doing just for you. Thanks as always for listening in. Please remember to like and leave us a review wherever you happen to listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. You can follow us today by simply going to youtube.com/OmniTalkRetail. So until next week.
Oh, man.
On behalf of Ann and myself from the World Retail Congress in Paris, be careful out there.
The OmniTalk Fast Five is brought to you in association with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group. The A&M Consumer and Retail Group is a management consulting firm that tackles the most complex challenges and advances its clients, people, and communities toward their maximum potential. CRG brings the experience, tools, and operator-like pragmatism to help retailers and consumer products companies be on the right side of disruption. And Avalara. Avalara makes tax compliance faster, easier, more accurate, and more reliable for 30,000 plus businesses and government customers in over 90 countries. Avalara leverages 1,200 plus signed partner integrations to power tax calculations, document management, tax return filing, and tax content access. Visit Avalara.com to improve your compliance journey. And Wiliot. Wiliot's ambient IoT visibility platform powered by battery-free Bluetooth tags eliminates scanning for real-time end-to-end inventory visibility. For more information, head to Wiliot.com/OmniTalk. And TGW. Revolutionize your grocery supply chain with TGW. Their experts tailor automation solutions to your needs, ensuring you have the edge. Work with TGW before your competition does. Discover more at tgw-group.com. And finally, Sezzle. Sezzle is an innovative buy now, pay later solution that allows shoppers to split purchases into four interest-free payments over 6 weeks. To learn more, visit Sezzle.com.